So, but once those pads come on, Tevin Jenkins is a son of a bitch.
Kieran. Kieran. Oh, that was good. There is that.
The Bears offense is just like Tony's Wi-Fi, which is struggling.
I wake up, flex, I'm down now, check, no drip is wet.
Welcome back to the Irish Bear Show. It is great to be back. It's been another kind of chaotic week. Obviously, there was a game that went on this week, right? Something happened.
Patrick, or something, man.
Yeah, look, it is good to be back. EJ, it is great to have you back on the show straight after the Super Bowl, which is good as well, which kind of means your life is about to get very, very busy over the next couple of weeks. So how are you doing?
There's no about to. It got very busy a couple of weeks ago, which is one of the common misconceptions that a lot of people in my life who sort of tangentially watch what I do is like, oh, well, the season's over. It's going to be chill, right? You're like, no, this is actually a time of year where we work doubly hard because the draft stuff really starts before the season ends. It kicks up. We were at Shrine 2 weeks ago down in Dallas. And, you know, that we did our Super Bowl preview episode from there. So it really is a sort of overlap and gets a little bit easier, a little bit more focused. Let's put it that way. It's a little more singular, but there's no easy. It's pretty much the fuse is lit and it won't go off until the draft is over. So,
yeah, that's similar to what my wife said to me. We were on a walk yesterday. She's like, oh, so the Super Bowl's over. So that means there's not going to be as much to talk about. I'm like, yeah, no, there's more to talk about now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's good, though. It's nice to kind of completely wrap up the last season and kind of look ahead to this next season, especially when it comes to the Chicago Bears, where they kind of look into the number one overall pick just because they made a fantastic trade last year. And it seemed like that was a lot of the kind of questions that we heard from people talking in terms of kind of Super Bowl week and stuff like that. So we'll talk a little bit about it, but also some of the things that we did hear this week from guys like Adam Schefter and Rappaport and stuff like that on what they're hearing about this whole quarterback situation. But before we get into kind of the reports that are out there, I kind of wanted to get your opinion on it. So obviously everybody comes into the season hoping that you get that resurgence from Justin Fields that kind of elevates you to at least be competing for maybe the wild card spots and stuff. And look, he got injured for a few games. There was inconsistencies there. And I think unfortunately for him, the Bears ended up with the number one overall pick, which they probably didn't expect. So with all that kind of context at the back of it, how do you view kind of the future at the quarterback position for the Bears? And is it just so much so that when you have number one and everybody's talking about Caleb Williams as a guy that can be their guy, it's just unfortunate for the current quarterback for the Bears?
Well, you bring up a really good point. And, you know, as Ann said, when we got in, this is going to be the focal point for the entire offseason, because not only does Chicago have the number one overall pick, they also have, you know, the rest of their picks for the most part. We'll talk about that. They have an asset that other teams want in terms of a quarterback if they're not going to keep Justin Fields. So much of the entire offseason conversation is going to go on and in and through Chicago. So none of these things are independent. It's very easy to take all of these in a silo and say, well, Justin's Justin and the number one overall pick is what it is, and the quarterback class is this. And it doesn't work that way as a football team. You don't get to make all these decisions in a vacuum. So we'll talk about the situation. How I view it is, yeah, we were all hoping that Justin would go a little bit farther this year. And you can put reasons on there for sure. And you can for the last two seasons as well. But the bottom line is, when somebody has 39 starts, which is a lot of starts in the NFL. Usually, if you're not playing super well, you don't get that many. That's, in my opinion, enough. Like, the NFL is a meritocracy. He doesn't need any more to figure out what he is. You've seen what he is, and there's very high highs. There are, you know, the ability to break a game open with his arm or his legs. He's shown the ability to do that. There is a lack of consistency. He doesn't do it all the time. He doesn't do some of the basic stuff all the time. And that makes it hard to win football games. It makes it hard to sustain drives. It makes it hard to put, you know, complete pressure on another team. And on top of that, yes, weave in the number one pick with a very good quarterback class, because as many people have said, if this was the quarterback class from a couple of years ago, the Brock Purdy class, like, and you had the number one pick, it would be different. There would be, I think, a much more sort of level playing field. This year, there is a very good crop of quarterbacks, probably even better than next year's mythical class, because next year's class is always mythical. Even now, people are saying, hey, this class is probably better than next year's class, which is not typical. Usually people are saying, oh, but you can wait until next year. People are already saying, look, if you need a quarterback, this is the year. So you have a team, has the number one overall pick. You've seen 39 games from your current starter. He is bottom third in the league, if you by most measures, if you look at EPA per play. He is, you know, just about the top of the bottom third. Is that good enough in a division that you look at the NFC North, which is surging? Detroit had a great year. Obviously, Green Bay is on the rise. Vikings, you know, were a starting quarterback away from threatening for the playoffs as well. Very well could have been a three playoff team division. And then you got the Bears. All that to say, I don't think the Bears can sit idle and not take the quarterback they need out of this draft with this opportunity. It doesn't come around very often. Like you said, they didn't even probably think they were going to get it. They did get it. It's time to act.
I get that. I really do. I understand where you're coming from. I'll get into who the quarterback should be in a minute. Just before you go on further on Justin Fields, my own take has changed back and forth all the time. What I will say is, and I'm saying it now on the show because I said it to somebody else off air, Justin Fields for me is about emotion and about hope. And for me, the Justin Fields scenario was the enjoyment that everyone got in Chicago when he was drafted. And that whole feeling of elation, followed by the elation of some of the performances that he personally did and some of the moments that he gave, which Bears don't get to see that in quarterbacks. And I think that that's the emotion you're seeing in quite a lot of people. Had Justin Fields got out there and been a good thrower, had been done all those things, but wouldn't have done the electric stuff with his feet, I think nearly all the fan base would have jumped on board and said, you know what, 3 years, exactly what you said, EJ, 3 years, the figures aren't right, we need that move on. But because of the electricity of it and the hope it created and the emotion that it created, I feel that that's where that attachment is. And look, I understand people are going to say, oh, emotion shouldn't come into this. It shouldn't come into it for Ryan Poles. It should come into it for the fan base. And I think that's where I massively disagree with people who give out to me on Twitter or whatever it's called now about that emotion piece. And I just wanted to say that now, because it's just something that's been annoying me about this whole conversation, this whole debate, that because I love Justin Fields, I'm an idiot, that I should be doing this. I'm not saying you said that, anyone. I'm just saying that that's what's there.
No, I get it. I fully understand your point, and I think it's a very valid one. And my favorite piece about it is the separation you put between the fans and Poles. Yeah. You know, we as fans were hopeful. I love the Justin Field pick. He brought hope. I thought he was going to be very successful as a pro quarterback. He has been successful. He hasn't been very successful. Yeah. And he needs to be very successful. The other thing that comes into this is Justin seems to be a decent guy. I've never met him personally, but the way he comes off, he seems like a good dude. He seems like a likable guy, a guy that you could cheer for, a guy that you would hope would carry your team. So that piece is absolutely there. And regardless of what I say about what the Bears should do with the choice, what I think they should do with the choice, or what I think Ryan Poles should do with the choice, doesn't take apart from the fact that I was super excited when he was drafted. I fully believed in his capacity to be a top-tier starting quarterback in the NFL. And then I have to sort of split myself, exactly, like fan base, yeah, and Ryan Poles, and say, hey, the fan in me loves Justin Fields, thinks he's a good dude. The analyst in me has to say he's not the right quarterback for the Bears right now. Doesn't mean he's not going to be a good quarterback in the NFL. I actually think he will be. But I don't think that opportunity is going to come in Chicago. I think that time is past. And that is a hard thing to do, to dissociate sort of your love for the game and the love for all the plays and the love for the player and say, but the opportunity that exists leads me to believe this is what has to be done.
And that's a completely fair point.
Yeah, and I think that's where we've kind of landed as well. Because look, and I always remember the beginning of us doing this show was the whole, what was it, a week after Andy Dalton was signed by the Bears. And then suddenly we just started trying to build up the hype for the Bears, trying to trade up for Justin Fields. It happens and it's all that. And I think that's where the emotion comes from. Typically, it's like when you have the number one overall pick, I don't think the same sort of emotion will happen with Caleb Williams or Trey May or whoever, because I think we're going to be so far out from the draft and everybody's going to expect what's going to happen when you make a move like that, when you're not expecting to get a guy. I think that's where people get the kind of holy shit moment, and that's kind of what that draft was. And I think that you put it perfectly, EJ. I think it's the opportunity that has arisen now, where we said this last year, Poles gave himself an out, where he got that extra first round pick from a team that we all said they basically gave away their best player on offense to the Bears in that trade. It's going to be tough for Bryce Young in his rookie year. And that's what ended up happening. And the Bears are in this opportunity where they do get a chance to basically select their future, whether they wanted to take all the picks and continue with Justin, whether they wanted to move down a little because maybe they preferred a different quarterback, or whether they decided that, whether it be Caleb Williams or Drake May at the beginning of the draft, that they made that decision. You have to credit what Ryan Poles has done here, because he has put himself in a position to actually be able to make this choice, which a lot of other GMs don't get the opportunity to do. And I think that's why we talk about this in such a different way, because if the Bears were picking, like their pick is ninth, but let's say if the Carolina Panthers pick was like seven, we're probably not sitting here talking about, oh, we need to pick a quarterback here. We're talking about, well, what can we do to kind of make Justin be successful? But you're in a position now where you can pick a guy who may be a difference maker to might elevate your team even more. And with that comes some of those reports that did come this week. And we heard guys like Adam Schefter, Tom Pelissero, Ian Rappaport basically coming out and saying that the Bears are unlikely to move from one unless it's a historic haul, which you would imagine if they would, that would be from a team that, like the Washington Commanders, that are at two, and they're going to be giving up way too much for moving up one spot. And where I've kind of come from this is I see this from two angles. Number one, that the Bears really like Caleb Williams or Drake May, or two, they need to convince everybody that they really like Caleb Williams or Drake May. And I think when you're reading between the lines, the emotion of what you said, Ant, of people really liking Justin, hoping he does well, I think when you look at it as a realistic point of view, I just think most GMs want to pick their own guy or get the opportunity to pick their own guy. And this is the one off season where I think Ryan Poles has that opportunity. I personally think we're at a point now where I don't think he will trade back. I think he's just going to pick the guy that he wants as long as he's happy with, like, the medicals and the interviews and stuff. And that's where kind of this conversation is important, EJ, because every GM, every scout gets to watch the same tape as everybody else. But it's the combine is really the start of kind of this draft process. And I know to a certain point, the Senior Bowl and the East-West game was good because there's a certain select players that are there that they can interview. But when we're talking guys like Caleb Williams, Drake May, this is going to be the first time that these GMs are going to be able to sit in front of them and ask them questions and how important that's going to be. So I guess when it comes down to that, we heard all the reports. What would you want Ryan Poles to do? Like, you've looked at these quarterbacks here. Would you think that, okay, there's a, whether it's Caleb Williams or Drake May, there's no point in trading back if you really, really think that one guy is the difference maker here? Or do you think that there is more merit in what some people are saying, that if they did get a historic haul, is that worth moving back and not selecting your number one guy and risking another team getting him?
Again, these things don't exist in silos. And what you both brought up about where we just came from of the All-Star games and where we're heading to the combine. It's this weird little title period of the NFL schedule calendar. And what you're going to hear, you always need to understand or at least question, why am I hearing this? Why am I hearing this from this source in terms of where I got it? And then what agenda is this serving? Because that's how messaging comes out. Like, everybody's trying to push the agenda that works for their particular point of view. Agents do it, coaches do it, GMs do it, players do it. And you need to understand that for right now, it doesn't matter officially, we've got time, whether Chicago prefers Caleb or Drake or Justin, right? They need to put out there, and they have, you've seen this messaging. There are certainly people carrying poles water right now of, hey, maybe we'll keep both of them. That one came out and fans went nuts. And I was like, no, you don't understand what that is. The why behind that message is, we're not sure. We might do both, right? We could do either. We could do both. That's due diligence. And that's what Ryan Poles and the Bears are doing right now. And it's what they should be doing. Because again, it doesn't matter. It's months until the draft, right? They should be listening to everybody. And the combine is the opening of that official listening session. This is where trades get made for existing players. This is where trades get made for draft day. They don't get made on draft day. One GM doesn't call another with 5 minutes on the clock and go, hey, let's work all this out. Like, they go, remember that thing I talked to you about in Indy? Are you still willing to do it? Like, with everything that's gone on, are you still willing to do it? And they go, yeah, but maybe I need a little bit more. And that's all they talk about in the minute they have on the phone. They basically go, yeah, I'm still willing to do it. Are you? Yeah, okay, turn it in. So all that stuff's going to happen at the combine. So they're going to hear about which teams might want to come up, what those teams might be willing to put together as a package. Doesn't matter for who right now. In a month or so, probably coming out of the combine, they're going to know what the offer is for Justin if they're willing to move him. There's probably going to be one or two legit solid offers that they would consider. Certainly the Steelers, possibly New England. We'll see. I would say a compensation would be similar between the two. They're probably bidding against each other if they both want him. They're going to know coming out of the combine what that parameter is. That gives them, okay, if we do this, we get this most likely second round draft pick that we gave away for Montez Sweat back. So that impacts our draft strategy as well. We no longer have this gap between 9 and 75. They're also going to know what the parameters are, if there are any, for people willing to move up. Now, here's where the Bears need to settle in. If they're sure that Caleb isn't the guy, if they start having those interviews you talk about and they sit down and for whatever reason, tape, I have trouble believing it would be tape, but they sit down with him and you know, there's questions about who he is or his family involvement or whatever else, and it makes them uncomfortable, as because you need to be super comfortable. Like, that's one thing about having top overall pick. There cannot be any discomfort with this. You need to be as comfortable as you could possibly be. So if they were sure that Caleb was not their guy, and not or, and they'd be comfortable with another player in this class as their quarterback for the same reasons I talked about at the beginning of this, right? They're probably not running it back with Justin. You need to get a guy. You're not likely going to trade for a guy. That big round of quarterback trades we saw a couple of years ago, not likely on the docket for this offseason. So you need somebody in this class that you are satisfied with as your starter coming out of it. That's an and. So you don't like Caleb and there's another guy that you like. They might, and might is in capital letters here, think about it. But that's a lot of moving parts. That is unlikely. They should listen to offers. They're going to listen to offers. They probably already are listening to offers. But overall, they're probably going to take Caleb at number one.
On that, right? Yeah. So I really like Drake May. I really like Jaden Daniels. I agree with you. I think this quarterback class is really, really stacked. I've seen people talk about JJ McCarthy. I mean, I think for me, from the perspective of Caleb Williams, looks sensational, looks stuff, does stuff that he does on tape that seems insanely brilliant. And then there's part of me in the back of my head that says, the Chicago Bears never get it right at quarterback. It's always us that gets the wrong guy. Mm-hmm. So let's put that into conversation. So let's say we've had that and we've gone Caleb Williams and Drake May is 1A, 1B. So they're relatively close together, right? And I'm comfortable with that conversation in my head. Do you then contact Washington and say, which one do you want? And try to do a deal with them to try and see if they can go up and take the risk that they'll take the guy that you kind of want? Or what would be the kind of scenario? You understand what I mean? In that conversation scenario.
I absolutely understand what you mean. And I will take it in three parts because you brought up something that I kind of want to talk about that. So I've spent the last 2 days just doing quarterback stuff. I watched another three games of May from this year yesterday, and I watched another two games of Caleb from this year this morning. Now, that's in addition to games I've watched from last year and other games for each guy that I've watched this year. So this is just kind of like, okay, let's get all the way through this. One thing that I want to address first is, as a Chicago fan, we always get it wrong. And this, I think, is a major thing. This is a refrain that we are going to hear. We've already heard it during draft season. When a quarterback does something, college quarterback in this case, does something, and we as Chicago fans have seen it before or seen it recently, and it's been part of a failure, we have PTSD about that.
100%.
This is a Chicago fan problem. So if you look at, let's just take Caleb's tape, because a lot of this comes up with Caleb, right? And that someone will pull one play from Caleb and they'll pull one play from Justin Fields and they'll say, see, this is the problem with Justin Fields, and Caleb has the same problem. That is a Chicago fan problem. I want to be super clear about that.
Yeah.
Because if you look through the rest of that tape, you don't even have to go to another game or another year or anything else. You look through the rest of that tape, there's probably 25 things that Caleb does that you go, holy shit. Like, what in the world are we even talking about here? That is a Chicago fan problem. Like, most other fan bases, especially ones that already have a quarterback, are looking at Caleb Williams going, why are we talking about this? Like, why are we even talking about this? So Chicago fans are going to kind of have to get over it. They remind me a lot of Cubs fans before the Cubs won the World Series. It's always going to collapse. It's always going to be bad. And look, they haven't known anything else for the last 50, 60 years. Like,
I used to have hair. That's how long ago.
100%. So as you look at it, if that was the case, and hey, let's just say stranger things have happened. The Commanders call up and they go, we want number one. We'll give you number two and all the other stuff. But we're telling you, we want May. Like, we're going to put you on the clock and May is going to be off the board. Let's just say that happens. I'm not saying it's likely, but if you were able to get that guarantee, 100% you do the deal. Like, in a heartbeat. Because the problem is, if you do anything as Chicago besides pick Caleb, and Caleb is good to very good, he doesn't even have to be great. He doesn't even have to win a Super Bowl. If that guy goes to the playoffs year after year and your guy goes every other year, which would still be pretty good for Chicago, you're going to get dragged. And I'm not saying that's why you should make the decision. I'm saying that's what rests in the balance on this decision. So if something crazy happened and the Commanders called up and said, we'll go to one, we'll take May, will you take a little bit less? You can still pick Caleb. I don't know why they would do that, right? Because they know you're probably going to pick Caleb anyways, and they can just pick May for free. So there isn't any reason, unless they think you're going to sell the top pick, which I really don't think most people think Poles is going to do. Now, he's going to do everything he can to drive up that value and say, hey, we might pick, might be for sale. We might do this. We might keep Justin. We might do Neil. That's his job as a GM, is to drive up the value of that pick. But I don't think most GMs in their heart of hearts think that anything is going to happen besides Chicago being on the clock going, any takers anymore? Nope. Final bid. Okay. We're taking Caleb. Great. Start your draft. So it's possible, but that's a lot of moving pieces, and I don't think there's a lot of motivation because a trade takes two.
The interesting one that I was thinking of the other day, because I think I've settled on where I firmly believe the Bears will take Caleb Williams at one, and like you said, they're going to be having a lot of these conversations, but when you hear of certain rumors of like teams wanting to move up to get one of these quarterbacks because they're not confident in next year, we have to also remember the Bears are picking at 9, and they may want to see what teams are interested that are outside the top 10 in moving up. And sometimes by taking some of these calls in the combine, they may not even be thinking of number one, because they may feel confident that they're going to pick number one. They may feel confident that whoever they pick at one, the other quarterback is going to the Commanders at two. And then really it starts at what do the Patriots do? Mm-hmm. If you start to see it where it gets to that 7-8 and there's still, I don't know, JJ McCarthy that's still there, or I don't think Jaden Daniels will fall
here's,
to that point.
Here's the sneaky part. Here's the sneaky part. The Bears can better their own future by dealing Justin to New England, even if it's for less compensation.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
You take another bidder out for a quarterback, because then they have their quarterback. They've paid presumably a second round pick, but three is no longer a quarterback. Now they could try and sell that pick, and they probably will if you're New England, right? So you can't control that, but you can literally take one potential bidder off the board and then create, you know, a bit of a frenzy. But yeah, nine is absolutely a pick and play again, because right now there's no pick for Justin Fields and the gap is 9 to 75, which is massive.
Can I say that? I honestly think that if New England were there at three and they've got Justin Fields, they take a Marvin Harrison Jr. Because I think Marvin Harrison Jr. potentially, arguably, is the best player in the draft. Arguably. Yep. And therefore, if you're a New England, if I'm a New England fan, and oh my God, that would make me sick. But if you were a New England fan, right, you would sit there and you would go to yourself, okay, why would we take out three when we've got this opportunity to fit Justin Fields with Marvin Harrison Jr.?
Yeah, pretty good start. Pretty good
start.
That
wouldn't be the worst way to start as a new head coach.
No, my household would be hell because my wife is a New England Patriots fan. So there would still be Justin Fields stuff in my house. So it would be, and then when you go to that, it would be very, very funny if that did happen. But I also think that when you look at it in the Bears scenario, if they were going to deal him, obviously the two teams we've heard about so far, the Steelers and the Patriots, if they were both offering a second round pick, you're obviously going to take the Patriots, because being at the top of the second round, even if it was just going to be trading back, because we know really the point of the draft where the majority of the trades happen is actually the top of the second round, because teams have looked at who's still available. Yep. So that is going to be an interesting one. But look, before we move on to kind of the going towards the combine and stuff like that, I kind of wanted to get your opinion on it. You mentioned the PTSD about Bears fans, and the first thing that actually came to my head was Trubisky and May just having the same jersey and all that.
100%.
When you look at these two guys in terms of May and Caleb Williams, and we do kind of compare to previous drafts, where do you stack them as prospects at the time? Like, we'll ignore players' careers in the NFL, but actually coming out to the draft, where do you actually stack these in terms of where you project them moving forward?
Yeah, I don't just sort of as a rule project to previous drafts or future drafts because the draft is a snapshot, right? You have the picks you have this year. And for the most part, you can't just say, oh, I'll take it next year. I mean, you can trade for next year's picks, but that's rare. You have the picks you have for this year and you have the players who are in this draft class, and that's it. It's finite. So it's this, I think, sort of fun, like cotton candy exercise to say, well, where does he stack up against the last 4 years worth of quarterbacks? Well, they didn't take a quarterback. I mean, they did. They took Justin Fields 3 years ago, but you know, I don't do that. So in terms of where they stack up against other quarterbacks in this class, I do believe they are 1-2. I do believe it's clear for me. I like both guys. I think both guys have a strong potential to be, I would say, at least average starters. And some people might think that's backhanded praise. It's not. There are no sure things. And, you know, the classic one that, again, we have Chicago PTSD about is Mahomes, right? But like Andy Reid laid so much groundwork for Mahomes to be the Mahomes he is now, both before he got there and after he arrived, that I don't think any of us believe, any football fans in general, not just Chicago fans, believe Mahomes would have been the same if he'd been drafted by the John Fox regime. Like, it's no, he's not the same guy. Is he still a good player? Is he still a, you know, guy capable of making miracle plays? Yes. Is he Patrick Mahomes as we know Patrick Mahomes right now? No, if he's not with Reed, absolutely not. So again, both these guys, I think, definitely have starter ability. For me, it's very clear. And again, I just spent the last 2 days sort of freshening up, watching back to back. That really helps me. And May is a very good player. He's very, I think he's different in a lot of ways from Caleb Williams, and not necessarily the ways that fans think. He's crazy athletic as well. He reminds me a lot of Justin Herbert in terms of his athleticism. He's got a big arm, not quite as big as Herbert, but his legs are just as good as Herbert's. People are like, Herbert's? Yeah, Herbert can freaking run, for those of you who don't remember. Like, he can take 40 yards if you give it to him. So can May. He's very quick when he moves. He's, you know, he manipulates the pocket pretty well, especially in tighter pockets. He doesn't have the big looping stuff necessarily that Caleb does, but that doesn't mean he's not effective moving in the pocket. A lot of people are going to make this a sort of referendum on plays in structure. And again, especially in Chicago, because that's a failing of Justin's, right? So everybody's going to project that forward. And you're going to hear this over and over again, that Caleb doesn't make plays in structure. That's like 100% bullshit. Like 100%. I can show you. So we'll give you five routes. And if you can't build an offense out of the five routes, plus all the go ball stuff he can do, I mean, he throws the hell out of the slant and structure. He can throw the out with anticipation, on time, on target, on the chest. He throws back shoulders very well. He throws curl comeback very well. And he throws dig, like backside dig. Like, those are five of the most popular routes in the NFL. If you're Shane Waldron, you can't build an offense out of those five routes, which I can show you multiple variations of him hitting those on time, in structure, in rhythm, you know, perfect yak opportunities. Like, he throws those plenty. People look at the plays where he hesitates and then does something crazy. I get it. But then you add to all those base plays that he does and can make, these plays where he just uncorks it, and he's got a video game arm. Drake May's arm, very, very good. Like, I put out a tweet last year about how distracting Drake May's arm was. And it is, but Caleb's is just different. Like, he'll just flick it 55 yards, like, on the numbers. Like, it's crazy stuff.
Just on that, right?
Yeah.
The fact that we have a defensive-minded head coach, that our GM is backed and support, and that's the way forward he is going. Don't get me started.
Get me started. We'll be on the same page there.
This is the reason why.
Anyway,
not matter who we drafted one, but that's a separate conversation for a separate day. Yep. He's a defensive-minded coach. And it's openly said to Fields near the end of the season, he wanted 2-0-0 club and didn't want to give the ball away. And that was his most important part of what he wanted for his quarterback. If you use that, and if you got that in Poles' ear, and that's what he's constantly saying to Poles, that's the conversation. Looking at the two quarterbacks you've mentioned, which do you think Matt Eberflus would like?
I wouldn't put it in Matt Eberflus's hands.
I wouldn't either. Like,
he has to be involved, but I'm not giving him veto power, most certainly after last year's choices on offense. Let's just call him that for both the coordinator and then the offense within that coordinator's term. He has to okay it. He is still the head coach of the football team, but he does not get like first or second or third vote in this. Like, this has to be Warren and Poles at the top, because you are picking number one and it is different. It's face of the franchise stuff. And then it has to be Waldron's call. Like, Waldron has to be completely fine with this. And honestly, after just, you know, fresh off two Caleb games this morning, if Waldron looks at Caleb and goes, I don't want that, I don't want Waldron. Like, it's just that simple. Like, there is so much there to work with in structure, out of structure. Literally any throw on the field at the same level as any quarterback in the NFL. I would put Caleb's arm against anyone in the NFL. He has that kind of arm. It's just silly. So if you can't work with that, like, you're just not an offensive coordinator. Like, go somewhere else. If you need something besides that, what you need to do is limit the plays that he really does something that's not great. And those are already pretty limited. People would have you believe that that's all Caleb is just scattered and no instruction, and everything is 5 seconds after the snap and he's just making stuff up. Like, don't believe that stuff. Like, his offense was pretty much garbage this year. It's like 60% screens, which is a really tough thing to kind of assess. But, like, again, when he has those opportunities to do very basic NFL quarterback stuff, win from the pocket on time, hit a guy in stride, you know, and he does the easy stuff too. Like he'll see a break in coverage and hit that guy because he can literally, without setting his feet, just go flick and put it on him 40 yards down the field and go, look, you busted coverage. It's touchdown. Like he can do that stuff too. So in terms of turnovers, I don't think that Caleb is really turnover prone from throwing the ball in terms of interceptions. Now, he certainly had some, absolutely. What worries me more about Caleb is fumbles. And again, I think that's coachable in a pretty basic way of the same kind of rules that you put on Mahomes. Andy Reid famously said the first 2.5 seconds are mine. And after that, just go do your thing. Like, I don't want to legislate Mahomes out of you, but for your first season, the first 2.5 seconds are mine. You do what I say in the order I say it. And then if that's not working, feel free. You're going to have a similar structure with Caleb. And when he is running, he is also a very good athlete. He can scoot when he gets loose. But he runs like Peyton used to with the ball like a loaf of bread, even like 20 yards down the field. I don't care if he does that in the pocket. I actually prefer, for the most part, that he does that in the pocket. I realize that's dangerous in the NFL, but he is eyes up, still looking to make a play, and you need to have it out there to be able to throw it. As soon as he passes the line of scrimmage, I'm getting him with the running backs coach and like running him through the arms bar and just saying, no, high and tight, three pieces, get contact with that thing, because you cannot run around in the open field like this in the NFL and not lose a lot of fumbles. He did have a lot of fumbles. So I don't like it. But in terms of interceptions, he doesn't throw a lot of bad ones, like just straight up misread the coverage, throws it to a defensive back. Like we see that in the NFL all the time. Right now, he is going to see different coverages. I get it, but he doesn't typically throw those. Like they get tipped. He tries to squeeze it into a tight window, you know, which a lot of times he does very successfully. So again, that's not a, like he's trying to do something he can't. He's trying to do something he does all the time. Occasionally a defensive back makes a play too, gets a hand in there, gets tipped, gets picked. Like those don't worry me so much. The ones that worry me are like, oh, I overthrew my guy, you know, on a crossing route by 5 yards and I hit the safety right in the face mask. Like he doesn't throw those. He's much smarter than that as a football player. So I feel fine with him about turnovers. May has his as well. He's typically smart. He takes less chances, I would say. And he definitely takes less chances late in the play. And some people might say that's a really good thing. Well, when you look at what Caleb was able to generate on a lot of those, it was generally very, very positive. So, you know, again, they're very different players, but I don't have any problem with Caleb Williams as a turnover threat throwing the football. I think generally he's pretty darn good that way.
Yeah. And look, I think we've mentioned this in the kind of past couple of weeks, and obviously there's been the infighting on Bears Twitter, all that sort of stuff. But the one thing that we keep coming to is like the three scenarios here and the three quarterbacks, you're still putting yourself in a good position, because if you did decide to keep Justin, you're trading that pick and you're getting a load of ammunition to try and build around them. If you pick Caleb Williams, as you've just said, some of the strengths there that you look at, that's something that's very enticing to be able to add to your team as a quarterback. And the same thing for Drake May. It's good to be in this position in a draft where there are quarterbacks at the top of the draft that you would genuinely want for your team. And I think that's a really good situation for the Bears to be in. And look, we mentioned it a little bit ago that we're starting to get to the point where we're going to hear more stories about the draft prospects, especially kind of these quarterbacks. I think until a decision is made, whether Justin is traded or kept on the team, we're probably going to hear a lot of this. But if we do take kind of the idea of the expectation is Caleb Williams at one, we're heading towards the combine in 2 weeks' time. Obviously, people will be looking. I find it difficult to get amped up at quarterbacks at the combine because really they're throwing to like whoever and they're in short, so I don't really care about that. Obviously, for GMs, it's all about interviews and medicals and stuff. But when you look at the combine in 2 weeks, what are some of those players that you think that, I guess, one that you're interested to see, but you think are going to kind of really help themselves at the combine? We see the few guys every single year that really help their draft stock. I guess, is there any of those guys that you're very interested in that you would actually see as a pretty decent fit for if you were building kind of this offense around a Caleb Williams, or just in general, a guy that you've seen on tape, or you've seen in either the Senior Bowl or the East-West game, and you're just really excited to see how they perform at the Combine in 2 weeks.
Yeah, a lot. For a draft nerd like me, the Combine is always interesting. And again, you need to know what you're looking for. The Underwear Olympics part of it, in general, I'd say 80% of it is not great. There are definitely certain things I look for. As you mentioned, this is where the trade sort of scenario for Justin and parameters are going to get real clear. And honestly, a deal could be made pretty quickly after the Combine. If there's clearly only two suitors and one offer is clearly better than the other, there's no reason to wait and let somebody get cold feet about that and change their mind. Like, get that done. It squares up your board. It squares up everybody else's board. It also squares up all the rest of your talks about what you're going to do with one or nine or anything else, because it's very clear to the rest of the league at that point what's going on. So that's probably the most interesting thing. The on the field stuff, I'm really interested in the second and third tier players. Not really the guys they would pick at one or nine if they stuck. I assume if they stay at one, it's going to be a quarterback. I would say at nine, it's probably between, if it's me, it's between a receiver and an edge. And then what, right? Then getting into, if you do get a second round pick for Justin, what are you going to do with 75? How do you build the rest of this team? To me, sort of in priority, that's interior offensive line. Bears cannot come out of this offseason, either from free agency or the draft, without a center. You got to have a center. Like, yeah. There's just, we're done. Like, stop doing this. Get a center. Like, starting center. Another edge. If they don't take one at nine, then that's a place. Wide receiver three, because I really do think they need a wide receiver three. I would suspect that if they're going to take two, it would be up at nine, or if they trade down a few picks. Again, it's a stacked wide receiver class, but because of that, if you're not going to go out and throw big free agent dollars at a wide receiver, you need wide receiver three. You can certainly get one even way down the board. So who are those guys? Who are those guys? You know, I think a guy like Taj Washington makes a ton of sense if you pick a Caleb, because he's going to be available in the mid rounds. He's a good player. He already understands the quarterback. He could slot in, be a wide receiver four. He's a return threat. Like, there's a ton of those guys in this draft. And then safety. Like, not a super sexy pick, not a super popular pick. I would be surprised if the Bears did not come out of free agency of the draft with a safety, probably from the lower rounds, not going to be a high pick. So who's that guy, right? And when I was talking to Bears scouts at East West at the Shrine game, you know, they had a different focus. They weren't talking about quarterbacks or wide, you know, they were looking at wide receivers, but they weren't really talking about that. But they were talking about the edges that were there. And I was like, hey, who's, and I didn't phrase it that way. I just said, hey, who's, it's the question you always ask when you have these things. Who's lighting it up for you? You know, who caught your eye? And there's a couple of guys that they mentioned that were edges, right? And they're down the board edges. These are, you know, guys you're going to get in the third or fourth round, not guys you're going to get in the first or the top of the second. So I'm really interested to see how they sort of, how Chicago and Poles and his staff really fill this team out, no matter who's a quarterback. So I'll be looking for that. And then the thing I really watch at the Combine, which is weird that a lot of people sort of, other people don't really tend to watch, or they say they don't watch, is the movement drills. I don't really care about the testing. Like, I care about the testing in very, very narrow windows. Like, there are two or three measurements that I care about for each particular group, and they're different. Like, if you're an edge and you have a crappy three cone, sorry, man. Like, there are historical parallels that were, if you're below that, you're not going to succeed. You're not going to get more than like 10 lifetime sacks, period. Same thing with guards. Same thing with, you know, every measurement has its own sort of alignment to a position. But really, I want to see those movement drills. And whether it's the gauntlet drill for wide receivers, the backpedal drills for DBs, you know, the circle drills for the defensive linemen are really fascinating. The figure eights they do. You know, and some of my catches from that process in previous years are guys like Miles Bryant, the defensive back that plays for the Patriots. Like, he's a guy that played right up the road at Washington. I didn't pay a lot of attention to him. I saw him at the combine. I thought, man, he moves a little bit better than I thought he did. He just in field drills, again, doing football stuff, right? And so sort of was on him before the draft. Ends up, he's a starter in New England now. Legarius Sneed was a guy that I looked at and went, huh. Now, did I have any prediction Legarius Sneed was going to turn into the absolute dog that he is? No, but I liked him. I was like, good size. Look at his feet. Look at his hands. Like, he moves really well. I'm going to go back and watch more tape on him. I did. Charlie Werner, the tight end, the second tight end, the blocking tight end for San Francisco. He caught almost zero balls in college. They never threw him the ball. He caught the ball really well at the combine. And I was like, man, maybe he's more than just a blocking tight end. Turns out that that's how San Francisco used him. He's really good at that. But Charlie Werner was a guy that I put on that. And Benito Jones, the defensive tackle for Detroit, again, a guy that I'd watched on tape. And I was like, okay, he's a two gap run stuffer. And he gets to those movement drills. And man, for being a guy that was whatever he was, 335, he can really turn the corner. Maybe there's a little bit more there. So those are the guys I'm trying to sort of pick out of the wash. And then look, you're going to see some trends this year. There's a lot of whispers about speed, specifically from the cornerback position. Mm-hmm. So you're going to see guys like multiple guys take shots at the record. We were one of the cool things that we always ask draft prospects is, where are you training? Because there's multiple training facilities around the United States where agents send these guys and they go in groups. So they're with other guys from other schools and whatever else. So we always ask, where are you training and who are you training with? And there was a funny story from a guy that's training with the Clemson corner, Nate Wiggins. First day they showed up, they roll off the van, like everybody's just kind of chilling out. They let him warm up. They let him stretch a little bit. No track shoes, no special prep, no nothing. They just like run a baseline 40 and then we'll kind of go from there and set your goals for what you're going to do here over the next 6 weeks. So Nate runs pretty close to last. Again, just like running shoes, light stretch, light warm up so you don't pull anything, and just rip one off. No training, nothing. Day one, straight off the van. Runs like a 4.27. And everybody was like, all the other guys, all the other top tier athletes who are, you know, whose agents are paying tens of thousands of dollars to have them, they're all looking at him and like, dude, why are you here? Like, with no training, straight off the van, you just ran everybody's like premium time, like their dream time. You're not even in track shoes yet. And he's not the only one. There are multiple whispers about guys at Shrine and Senior that are going to be low 4.2s. Like, and some of them are big, like Wiggins is over 6 foot. So yeah, you're going to see some crazy, crazy speed. I would imagine when it boils down to it, look, it's a, you know, it's not the greatest sleep schedule. It's pretty nervy time. You got to perform under the lights, all that. It always sort of weans its way out, but there's going to be three or four guys in the low 4.2s who you're going to be holding your breath on a little bit going, okay, like that. And then Peyton Wilson, the linebacker from North Carolina State, he hit 23 miles an hour on GPS this year. He weighs 235, like in pass, on the field, GPS data, 23.3 miles an hour at 235 plus pads. Like that guy can wheel. Like you can say what you want about, I think he's a good linebacker. I think he's probably ILB1 in this draft, but like, mm-hmm, that dude's going to surprise people. And there's always people like that just sort of pop up and they're like, who is this guy? 6'3", 235. And he just ran a, you know, what does that translate to? 23 miles an hour on 40 is like 4.4?
Yeah.
5? Like, that's, I mean,
ridiculous.
I mean, he's going to be fast at that size. So there's always guys like that. And then guys that are, like you said, there's some stuff you just kind of look at and go, hey, it doesn't really translate, bench press, stuff, mm-hmm, like that. But a bunch of the measurements as far as exclusionary stuff and a bunch of the testing as far as like, hey, you have to hit a certain threshold or holy cow, nobody's ever gone that fast at that size. Those are the things that kind of pop out for me. But for me, it's really about the movement drills. And like you said, for the teams, it's interviews and medicals.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, one of the things that you mentioned as well, obviously, for the Bears, it's one of the key ones is getting the interior of the offensive line sorted, because we all focus on center, and we also have to remember is that like Nate Davis didn't exactly light up the league this year when he was playing at guard. No, Tevin, yeah, Jenkins, we know what his issues are. He's quite injury prone, and I wouldn't be surprised if the Bears ended up trying to get to, like, obviously they might have to move down a little bit in the draft to get more capital than just the 6 picks they have right now, but to get multiple players in the interior, because it seems from kind of the outside looking in, that's a pretty decent class this year, especially when you look at some of the guys that we did see at the East-West game and also, mm-hmm, the Senior Bowl. Like, it's one of those where I think that's going to be where a lot of the questions are. Like, obviously, the standout was Jackson Powers Johnson. Where does he go? He's kind of the one guy everybody's talking about. But is, I guess, one, what you think of him, but what you think of that class in general as for the Reds being able to find starters at the interior, because it's probably going to be important this year, especially if you are going to pick a quarterback.
Probably going to be important every year, but we saw how important it was last year when you didn't have it for multiple reasons. Yeah. And again, Poles thought he had his plan together. I never agreed with the plan at center, but I did with guard. He thought he was good with Tevin, and Tevin has been great when healthy. And Nate was very good as a free agent before he got to Chicago. He was not good in Chicago. He had all the stuff at the beginning of the season, which we don't know what that was about, but on the field, he got run by like a turnstile at least twice a game, which if you want to talk about contributing to any quarterback's issues is a really big deal. So I'm with you. You need a couple of players on the inside. JPJ was fantastic. In fact, he was too good. He's not going to be there for the Bears. He's going to be probably the only first round interior offensive line player off the board. And he should be at 323. Guy can move. You know, and this is a benefit. In previous years, we never would have seen that guy. He's a junior. So juniors didn't get to go to All-Star games previous to this year. So he never would have got those couple days to show out and sort of solidify his number one status, but he'll probably be gone. Zach Frazier is, he's my Eddie Jackson Memorial Award winner this year. He's a guy that got injured. And so his draft stock is going to drop a little bit, but strangely enough, it's literally the same injury that Eddie had. He broke his leg. Like, so no, you know, long-term bone heals up, you're good. Zach Frazier out of West Virginia is a great center. Graham Barton, Cedric Van Pram, those guys are all going to be in play. We'll see when they go. Lots of them would be good choices. There are others as well. And like you, I wrote in my notes, wouldn't mind another guard either at all. And there are good ones. There's a sweet spot for guard, third round, late third round, especially into the compensatory picks, top of the fourth round. Like, that's when you can still find really good guards and they are at a good value. I think the Bears do need one, because I don't think you can count on either one of Nate or Tevin. And then you take those sort of three and mix and stir and say, hey, who's the best two? And if one goes down, you've got a very solid backup. So
just a question on that. If we are going with a rookie quarterback, right? Is the danger then that, if we're going with, let's say, a rookie center, that is something that you'd feel comfortable with if we take in consideration that there's going to be mistakes. I get if it's Jackson, and I get that guy looks like a superstar. I get all that. But if it's someone, let's say, in the second, third round that we're picking up, there's a reason why they're in the third round. Would you be comfortable with having a rookie center with a rookie quarterback?
Well, I would. You need to pick the right one, and you need to pick them sooner than the third round. And what's taught us that is the last couple of years. There were guys like Juice Scruggs that I loved last year. We all had even those of us that loved Juice had like a top four grade on him, top round four grade. He went in round two, right? Played very well as a starter at guard for the Texans, but you can't wait. Teams are understanding that these guys are valuable and they're going sooner. So the old we'll wait for the third, and then we'll pick off the center. It'll be good. Like, you can't do that. You got to invest. And it's probably that pick that you get for Justin. And I know that's not quote unquote sexy, but if you're going to get a guy that you want to plug in as a rookie starter, yeah, you're probably going to have to pick him there. I would be comfortable with it, but the other option is free agency. You could go get Lloyd Christianberry, who had a dreadful rookie year, kind of like John Michael Schmitz. We loved him. We saw him at 2020 in the Senior Bowl. He was dominant. He stoned everybody at the Senior Bowl, went to Denver and had a awful rookie season. Like, he was just bad, and it's sort of inexplicable. Don't know what happened. He's rebounded. He was one of the top five centers in the league last year for Denver. He's a free agent. If they don't re-sign him, great. Go spend your free agency dollars on a veteran center who can anchor the middle of that line, then go get a guard, rookie guard, third round, wherever you like them. Go get a guy that's got guard center versatility. There's a couple of them in this class. More than a couple of them that are showing that potential and could be good in either spot. Guys like Mason McCormick out of South Dakota State. Graham Barton has positional versatility. Cooper Beebe might be able to snap a little bit. Like, there's a bunch of guys who you can sort of pick. And then you have Stalwart at center, who you are pretty sure could be solid as a pro center. Again, with a rookie quarterback, yeah, it's nicer if you have a veteran center, I think. But if you have the right rookie center who really wants that responsibility. And that's the question I always ask those guys, is not whether you can, because they're all going to say they can. It's a job interview, right? If you say, oh, can you snap? They're all going to say, oh yeah, I can snap. I snapped in high school or whatever. But I ask them if they like it. because some guys will tell you like, yeah, I love it. I love being able to see everything, set protections, be the guy that people are counting on. And other people are like, hell no, I just want to maul people, put me at guard. Like, I just want to go beat people up. I don't want all that. And that's kind of the defining line is I don't care if you can do both. I care if you kind of crave that, if you want to be there. And those guys, when I was talking to Mason McCormick, he was like, oh no, I love it. Like, it's cool. And I was like, all right, sweet. Like, that to me means you are viable at both.
Yeah. And I guess kind of going into it, obviously his name kind of came up from the East West game. I know Christian Mahogany from Boston College was another one. Was there anybody else that kind of stuck out from the East West game and also the Senior Bowl where you're like, that's going to be one of my guys this draft cycle, where I'm just going to turn on the tape and be like, it's a good watch, because everything, when you look at it, you're just like, this is a guy that I know is going to be a damn good football player at the next level.
Yeah, and the next level thing's really interesting because, you know, there were a couple of guys that surprised at East West playing center, the center from NC State, whose name is escaping me right now, and the center from Penn State, Hunter Norzad, who we got to talk to both of them. We didn't interview either of them formally, but again, they were just hanging out with guys that we talked to in the lounge, and you kind of brought into the circle and you just end up having conversations with these guys. Both those guys, I thought, sort of played above their tape for me against mixed and varied competition, again, with, you know, even in one-on-ones, but also with support to their sides, new support to their sides, like you get in an all-star game. Those guys are really interesting to me. Center from, hang on one second. There's a couple centers, the LSU center again at the Senior Bowl, I thought was really good. Good enough that you're going to go back and watch him.
Charles Turner, was it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we've already talked about Cedric Van Pram. And JPJ, who again jumped up boards. Dylan McMahon is the North Carolina State center that I mentioned. Mason, they worked with him a lot snapping, which was a little bit different because he played guard almost exclusively at South Dakota State. And he looked very comfortable doing it. He had some very good reps there, which was, again, eye-opening. Christian Haynes from the Senior Bowl, Connecticut, the guard, thought he did a lot to help himself over the 3 days down in Mobile. And then, you know, if we're just talking about guards, like Troy Fatanu, who's close to me here up here at UW, played a bunch of tackle, but everybody is projecting him kicking inside. I think he'd be very, very good there. I also think he's probably going to go pretty high. I'd love to have him on my football team. I don't know that I'd be willing to pay, you know, a late second round price for a guard, even a good one. There's a lot of guys. And to me, there's more guys at center that are viable than when I started the process. There was like, man, we better get one free agency, because there's like four guys, and that means, again, limited supply, high demand. They're going to go really quickly, and you're going to have to spend a pick way higher than you'd like to, even for the kind of marginal starter guys. Now that I've gotten into it, looked at it, more guys are sort of crossing over between guard, center, and look decent doing it. I think there's, you know, six or seven decent possibilities up at the top of the draft, and that's like double when I started.
Yeah, and one of my kind of final questions, not to really to do with the Senior Bowl or East West, but it's a conversation we've actually had on the show, and it does relate to the Bears at number 9. And you mentioned that where you think, if you're kind of estimating the positions, either wide receiver or edge, and everybody knows kind of the top three receivers, but I think the biggest conversation point might be with Leitu from UCLA.
Yeah.
I have a big concern. Like, obviously, I don't have a problem with the player, the tape. I have a problem with somebody that walked away from football once before. And the worry is, if you spend number 9 in the draft, we know the toll it takes to play at the NFL level. Do you think that that's going to be a major red flag for some of these teams? That even though he hasn't been injured the last, 18 months now, but the fact that he did have the injuries before that made him consider walking away, do you think that's going to be a big thing for him that he's really going to have to get over if he's going to be kind of this top 10 to 15 player that people are projecting him being?
What's crazy is the sort of prototype for this very situation was similar player at the same school. Literally, this is the Jalen Phillips story.
Yeah.
Right. Jalen Phillips was at UCLA, quit was working as a janitor at a movie theater before he got the offer to go back to Miami. I mean, you get a lot of free movies, right? But it's literally teams are going to pull out the same card that they use with Jalen Phillips and say, hey, man, why'd you quit football? Do you really get like anything? So is it going to be an issue for some teams? Absolutely. There are some things that are always going to be issues for some teams and other teams that are going to be more flexible with it. I think every team is going to have to get that question answered to their satisfaction. The combine is going to be huge for Latu. Huge, not for testing. I actually don't think he's going to test that well. And I don't particularly care because, again, the tape is the tape, and he was the most effective edge.
He is
the most effective edge in college football this year. Like, Dallas Turner is going to test better than him. Some people will say that Dallas Turner's ceiling is higher. I'm not going to argue that. That's another knock on Latu, is like he might be as polished as he's going to get. He is really polished right now. He showed that at Senior Bowl, but combine's going to be huge for him for two reasons. And you mentioned interviews and medicals, and everybody's going to have to be satisfied on the medical. It's the same thing with Penix at quarterback, right? Everybody's like, oh, he had all these injuries. Well, he's had, you know, more than 18 months injury free. I mean, he was, you know, injured down the stretch, but not so he couldn't play. Yeah. He's had basically two injury-free seasons now. So people are going to have to say, hey, is this a thing he got over, or is this the thing we're worried about? What's the echo from those on both of those players? Like, do they have a clean bill of health? Or every year we get guys coming out of the combine, they're like, well, they're good for now, but they're probably only good for 2 or 3 years with that knee, that wrist, that ankle, that shoulder, whatever. So combine's going to be huge for him. Player I love. He's going to be fighting for edge one on my board. I don't know if he'll get it. Combine will definitely influence that, largely if there's a medical thing, he won't be. But in just terms of tape, like as a tape grade, he's right there at edge one in terms of you want a guy right now that can get it, that guy can get it.
If he didn't quit, honestly, this kid could have been top 5-6. I honestly believe that
I think he's really close right now. He's not going to be because of the other players ahead of him, because of guys like Marvin Harrison and the quarterbacks and whatever. But in terms of like, I think he's legitimately there in a down quarterback class. Would he be the first edge off the board if he was healthy? Again, teams always kind of go dealer's choice at the top. They might look at, you know, Dallas, they might look at him and they might say, okay, like, I just like this one better. But in terms of being in that conversation, 100% with you. He is a super talented kid at a position of very high need.
So many people are on about Caleb being so far ahead of Drake, and that conversation, I think it's a bit closer. For me, Latu is so far ahead of Dallas Turner, in my opinion. Dallas Turner's a very
right now, player. I would say, yeah, in terms of where he is now, it's a ceiling bet with Turner. That's the bet that people are making on Turner, is like, hey, we think he can be greater because we think Latu's topped out. But I don't think I've talked to anybody that honestly thinks that Turner is better than Latu as a football player right now. Like, that's just not a discussion that's going on.
And if the Bears came out with Latu, I honestly would be ecstatic.
If they're clean, if they come out clean from medicals and interviews, I've been saying that him at 9, if they stay at 9, it's a need. He's a great player. I like him. I wouldn't have any trouble with it. There are certainly some other players on the board I would consider, depending on how the board shakes out. And, you know, as expensive as both of those positions are now, wide receiver and edge, those are the reasons I mentioned those at 9, is because those are two of the most expensive contracts in the NFL. Got to get young talent. But, you know, you also have to be sure you got a second top 10 pick. Nice luxury, but you got to get it right. And that means a player that can contribute right now and has at least Pro Bowl as sort of the floor, if you're picking in the top 10, hopefully an all-pro ceiling.
Yeah, to finish off the show, I'm going to ask both you guys this question. It's because obviously a lot of the focus will be on those two top 10 picks. I want your kind of ideal scenario. Let's just say they stay at both picks, right? They pick at 1, they pick at 9. I want to know who you guys would, what would be your ideal kind of what Ryan Poles would do, where you would come away from the first round, you'd be like, nailed it. I'm not too concerned about what he does for the rest of the draft, because those first two picks I see as kind of cornerstone players moving forward. So EJ, I'll start with you, and then Ant, you can round out the show with your two guys as well.
For me, it's if we're staying at 1 and 9, it's Caleb at 1 and I would say Neighbors or Odunze. I might lean a little bit more Neighbors just because of the explosion factor, but I would not be at all sad with Odunze at nine. I know some people that don't see him as worthy of that spot. I, you know, him playing in my backyard, watching him for the last couple of years. I saw him last year at the pro day, and like, you should have seen it. Everybody was watching all the guys on the field, and like, he walked into the field house and like, everybody was just like murmur, like nudge, nudge, like there's Rome. Like he's that dude. Like everybody, you know, 75 people were just like, oh yep, there he is. Like everybody knew he was the dude last year. And then he went out and had that season that he had this year. So either one of those two wide receivers, great. I'd be very happy as long as the Bears are happy with those picks.
Yeah, for me, I would agree. I agree with what he just said. There is a little bit on the back of my head that likes to look alt. Left tackle. I like Braxton Jones, but I think we could get better at left tackle, and I want to get that. I look at what Detroit Lions did and how close they were to a Super Bowl with an offensive line that just looked solid, allowed them to have a not great quarterback, get them within a couple of plays to a Super Bowl. Would they have won that? Probably not, but still, I'd like to get to that point. So that's what they're. However, I agree. Odunze just looks. He looks everything in a bag of chips, as we say in Ireland. He just looks absolutely all there. I want to have that. I want to have, because what I'd love to have is I'd love to have DJ Moore slip inside and suddenly have an option for him doing slot stuff to allow Odunze, big guy, out the side. There's a lot of those things you could play with. I wouldn't be surprised if we double down on wide receivers, take somebody later on in the draft.
I think they should. Because of the talent that's available, I really think they should. There's so many. This year.
There's a guy that I saw, Thrash.
Jamari Thrash from Louisville.
That's the guy. I've watched tape on him, and I'm like, I'd never heard of him, and I just saw his name. I thought, that'd be kind of cool. It's kind of cool name. I looked it up, and I was like, wow, this guy has so much that you can play with. He's just got there's loads of those hands.
He can literally throw darts at the board for
Wilson.
Like,
yeah, keep going.
30 names. Yeah. I'm not even kidding. Like 30 names, and be like, man, as long as they got one of these guys up here in the top five, and then any of these guys as a secondary guy from the next 25, like, I'd be thrilled. And I mean, go look at Malik Washington, right? He's amazing. Go look at Cowing. I know he got hurt, but like, Troy Franklin is going to be in that second tier, not because he's a bad receiver, but he's just not at the level of the guys in the top, say, four or five. He's a great receiver. Like, we could just play name bingo all day. And for that wide receiver three position, I really think they should. I think they should double dip. It's an opportunity that's presented to them. It's a need, and it just lines up. So why not take advantage of it?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think the same in terms of I would like to get Williams and Neighbors. I think that would be, I just like the combination of having a DJ Moore and Neighbors. I wouldn't be against a Odunze either. But also, there is that kind of part of me is that if you don't get the edge opposite Montez Sweat in free agency, that it might just make more sense. Because realistically, if you don't go edge in the first round, you're probably not going to get someone that's going to be a difference maker. So I kind of lean towards wide receiver, but also, like you said, EJ, if Latu's medicals come back, the interviews are good and they're happy with that, I would not be against the pick there, because the tape is all there. It's all based on kind of what he can sell to these scouts and the GMs, that he's full on in, that he's completely over his injuries, and that he's all in on his career now. So that's where I think the big question will come down to, because I think personally, I think the two left tackles will go already, because we saw what happened last year. No one was talking about kind of the likes of Peter Skoronski at this time last year. Everyone was talking about as kind of the top guy going to go in the offensive line. And then you see a week before the draft, suddenly, oh, teams are going to trade up for Paris Johnson Jr. And then suddenly you have Darnell Wright that also goes really high. And I think a similar thing could happen this year as well, which is good for the Bears. It might push down some of those receivers and edge players. And I think that's And
well, we just talked about the depth of wide receiver, and it will, the depth itself will push down some receivers because people will be like, look, I have this pick at my next pick. Can I get, say they're looking for offensive tackle, right? At my next pick, can I get an offensive tackle of, you know, slightly lesser or close to equal value? Or can I get a wide receiver at slightly close or equal value? And the answer is going to be wide receiver this year, not necessarily tackle. So they're going to pick tackle first. And that's sort of artificially going to push some other positions that have a little bit more scarcity down the board. And you're going to see guys getting drafted in the fourth and fifth round that like have, and when I say starting, I mean starting in a three wide receiver set, like starting ability in the NFL. They're going to roll in and get 600-700 yards as a rookie. And you're going to see those guys coming from like the top of the fourth and be like, why did he go in the top of the fourth? And the answer is, well, there are 15 guys that went before him. Like they're all good too, but like he was just guy 16. So he ended up in the top of the fourth. Like that's just the way it goes.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, we appreciate you coming on, EJ. What do you have coming up over the next 2 weeks you get to Dallas? Because it's got to be a busy 2 weeks.
Yeah, no. So just got back from Dallas 2 weeks ago. I will be at the Combine in a week and a half in Indianapolis. After that, I will be at 3, possibly 4 pro days. So I am going to be at Oregon for, you know, Bo Nix and Dorless and Franklin and Bucky Irving and all those guys. Probably going to be at Oregon State too, because they're only a day apart. And it's only about an hour drive between those two schools. So I'll be down there for, you know, Talisi Fuaga and Gould, who we just saw return a punt in the East-West Shrine game. Going to be at UW's pro day for sure, because that's right up the road. That's later that same month, but they have probably 12 guys that are going to get drafted. Yeah. And then looks like we'll probably be at USC's pro day for Caleb as well. So I'll fly down to LA for that one. What else are we doing in between? It sounds like a lot. It is. And then we'll be in LA for the draft. We'll do our draft live stream again from LA. I'm trying to think of anything else that's going on, but other than that, it's largely this. It's hanging out in the cave, 6, sometimes 7 days a week, just like getting through film, trying to separate these guys. There's so many tiers. One thing I'm doing that's a little bit different this year is I'm watching film with a lot more people. I've done that sporadically in the past, and I've always wanted to. I've always enjoyed it, but I just haven't made an effort. And this year, like about a month ago, I kind of put the call out and said, hey, look, I've watched tape with you in the past. I want to watch tape with you, even if it's just once this year, or if you got time every week, whatever. So a few guys, it'll be every week. And then a few guys, it'll just be once for positions that they're really good at. And I always learn such a tremendous amount from that. And I've actually had people reach out to me this year saying, hey, I want to watch tape with you, cause I think I would learn a lot. And that to me is a freaky juxtaposition from where I started 11 years ago, but I'm happy to do that too. So, you know, there'll be a lot of that going on, just a lot of tape, bunch of pro days, combine. Yeah, it's going to be a whirlwind. It's not going to stop.
Yeah. Busy period, but look, try and get some sleep before you get to that time, because
what
I know
we're
probably on the same sleep cycles right now.
Oh, EJ, I would give you the edge of having less sleep as the father of a newborn. But yeah, I've been there too. It's similar. I'm better about that this year. It's everybody says, you know, oh, because you have so much more time because you don't have the full-time job anymore. And I'm like, no, I actually don't have so much more time. But when I do have extra time, my goal is not to fill it up with more football and scouting stuff, because that's what I'm spending all my time on. It's to do things like eat properly, sleep a little bit, go for a walk, you know, touch grass, all that stuff. So I try and fill that in when I'm not watching tape.
Yeah, look, absolutely. It's a lot of fun having you on the show. I know you're going to be a busy man over the next couple of months, but we do appreciate you coming on. For everybody that's been in the comments, like again, make sure you like the video, make sure you subscribe, check out EJ over at Bootleg Football, because it's always a good time to watch you kind of on that show as well, because it's like a different dimension from you and your Bears podcast as well. So it's always good. But look, everybody, please do subscribe, please do follow us, and until next time, all we can say is bear down.